This week on Barbell Shrugged, we interview Dr. Romanoff and learn how to run faster, farther, and injury-free for life.
Hey, this is Rich Froning. You're listening to Barbell Shrugged. For the video version, go to barbellshrugged.com.
Welcome to Barbell Shrugged. I'm Mike Bledsoe here with Doug Larson, Chris Moore, CTP behind the camera. We're at Princeton University. We have taken over.
We stole this classroom.
We broke into a classroom where Einstein once taught, and we set up our gear. Hopefully no one finds us. We have, this is perfect, perfect place to have Dr. Romanoff. Running genius. Movement genius, really. I've heard it's not just about running with you. It's you like to talk about swimming and biking and pose applies all that. So if you've ever had any questions about pose method or just how to run properly or barefoot or whatever, we're going to do our best to address this tonight without getting too off topic, which will definitely happen.
No, that's going to happen. It's going to be plenty of distraction.
But it's going to take us an hour to get through all the points. Make sure to go to barbellshrug.com, sign up for the newsletter, and we can notify you when we do things like break into Princeton University and abduct Dr. Romanoff.
He has graciously, voluntarily agreed to do this.
Yeah, he did. I think mostly because
he's amused with us and our shenanigans thus far.
He watched us talk and laughed quite a bit. So he's back there.
Not with us.
At us. Mostly.
Look at these guys.
Thanks for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure to be here. It's a really incredible honor to be in this building, in this university, and with
Speaking
you guys.
To us, thank you.
And with you guys as well. Thank you to invite me.
It's our pleasure, honestly.
Yeah, so if you're just listening, you should go check out the video and kind of see the view that we have going on here. We are actually in a legit lecture hall.
It looks like we're on the set of A Beautiful Mind.
This is where it was filmed. This room is where that was filmed.
It's exactly
what I was told today. Mm-hmm.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah. The Russell Crowe has been in this room? You would have to be shitting me. No, but I was telling the good doctor and Doug a minute ago that I was walking up to the little garden there, the Prospect Garden, which is lovely, just lovely. And I noticed one of the buildings on the side, the windows. You know that movie? There's a scene in that movie where he's doing math on a window with a little white marker pen. I saw those style windows. It was really cool. Remind me that, yes, lots of smart people have done.
Like, I gotta get a white marker pen.
I gotta pretend to be smart. Exactly. But I felt inspired, was what I'm saying, Michael, and I'm especially inspired now. That feeling transitions to this moment right now.
Well, let's see if that actually crosses over into the podcast.
I will tell such a good dick joke later. Give me time to think about it.
Wait, should we introduce your son as well? One more time, what was your name?
Severin Romanoff.
Severin
Romanoff.
He is your guardian angel.
He's my boss.
He's your boss.
We were making a joke earlier that you're the slave. You prefer being a slave. Just tell me where to go, what to do.
One edition, happy slave.
Happy slave. You have the wife, she tells you what to do.
Obviously, yes.
Obviously.
Otherwise, I wouldn't survive.
You came here, and people don't know this. You actually, I don't know how this happened, but you made your ways into the CrossFit community a while back. Was that through Brian McKenzie?
Yeah, it's Brian's McKenzie efforts. So he introduced me to Greg Glassman, and Greg Glassman told me, if you will impress our coaches, we will be in a friendly relationship. He put about 100 coaches, best coaches of CrossFit in San Diego University. I did presentations there, and the coaches love it.
The rest is history.
Yes. And our relationship was started and was continuing. A very good relationship.
How long ago was that?
It's already about 7 years, probably. Okay.
And I actually don't know what you were doing before you kind of made this partnership with, I don't even know if the partnership was the right word, but before you connected with CrossFit, what were you doing before that?
I was spying in America.
Spying in America?
Spying.
Oh, no.
Is that true?
You're not supposed to tell us that.
You're the worst spy ever.
I was pretending that I am trying to teach people how to run. So I was involved by accident again. Everything in life is an accident. Like you're meeting your wife an accident. Your kids come by accident, you know.
especially the kids.
Severin's like, shit, man. You told me you intended for this to happen. Happy accidents, you say.
Yes, it's correct. But I was waiting my son a very long time with my wife. And his name came way before my first kids came, you know. It's before my first and second daughter was born. Oh. Because his name was waiting him 15 years.
Wow.
It's a very lovely story.
Well, let's hear it.
Yeah. Yes. It, I guess I will share with you some. Oh, right now?
Yeah, do it.
Sure,
yeah.
Sure. This is the best stuff.
Oh, I'm meeting my wife in the first year in my university. She's in foreign languages student. I am physical culture and sport faculty student. I'm meeting her in the biggest square, Lenin Square in our city.
Lenin Square.
Mm-hmm. And we are talking friendly and about us, what we would like to do. And somehow came one question. If you would have a son, how would you call him? I told Severin. She told, no way.
She didn't like the name. Huh?
No, she told, I wanted the same name for my son.
Oh, no. Oh, wow.
Agreement was made.
Wow.
And that's it. It came from different sources. I was admired one gentleman from the novel of Russian writer about scientist Severin Budrys, you know.
Mm.
And its name came to me as a very extensive and very lovely name. And my wife loves this name because she admires one guitar player from Czerwona Ruti, a Polish rock group. You know?
His name was, he shared that name, I guess. He was the coolest thing.
You got the science and the art.
Yes.
There you go.
He got all this together in business connection.
There you go.
Did you have him like learning biomechanics and running and postures when he was like 5 years old?
And he started traveling. Yes, it's no funny, but I start teach him and he start traveling with me at age 4, you know.
Severin, get up and run for us. Let's check you out real quick.
I share a birthday with, I believe it's Einstein and Hendrix.
Jimi Hendrix?
But the most funny thing in this game, maybe not funny and even mysterious, that his birthday is November 27th. It's the birthday of San Severin.
Oh, wow. So,
we were with my wife in Cologne, Germany. It was a European conference there. And we are driving in a car and we suddenly see the street. It's called San Severin. We're like, let's go.
Yeah.
We're coming and there are church, San Severin. We're like, wow.
We come again. It's kind of cool, man, when all these, something you love, something this person you met loves as well, you stumble across these little indicators that sort of point you in all directions. You're going in the right direction in your life, it seems. Like these indicators are good signs for you.
It's correct, right. And suddenly we saw this and then I brought this brochure about San Severin. He was a Roman monk or priest who came in Cologne and built an incredible society over there. And people loved him. That's why he becomes saint, you know.
You've got a lot to live up to.
Yeah.
Jesus, man. You working on this?
You need to learn how to play guitar, run like a champion, and build amazing societies. But you're building his business, right? You're CEO, aren't you?
Right. Yeah.
I saw your business card. Oh.
That's why he's
very
my
fancy
boss.
Business card, by the way. Yeah, he's your boss. How long you guys been building this business, formalizing this into...
So I wouldn't dare take the CEO title. I felt I graduated to that about 2 years ago.
Yeah, 2 years ago.
If we're going to interview him as well, sorry. Do we want to put him on a mic for like long?
Yeah, for long. Yeah.
Well, sorry, we're getting a little distracted. We'll go back. Chime in. Yeah. With punchy comment here, sorry.
Doug, answering on your question.
Sure.
Sorry, I kind of detour.
Detour. We're used to it. We have lots of people to detour.
And really what I did, you know, when we came to America, I was unemployed guy, you know, and I didn't know what to do, actually.
When was that? When did you come to America?
1993. It was not the refugee things, anything. We came for wedding party for 2 weeks on Miami Beach.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. then we like it so much that we stay. Actually, it's my two girls decided that we have to stay here, you know. And we apply for papers and we answered positively, like permission was given, and it was given under the name as a exceptional abilities in higher educational
level. Oh, there you go. Put that on the resume.
Yeah, I was going through this thing in consulate in Mexico on the border in El Paso, you know, and I'm giving these papers for consulate in American consul in Mexico. He looked at my paper and told, "Wow, we need people like you." Boom.
Easy.
Oh, wow.
Easy. Easier back then.
What were you doing back home?
Oh, I was...
sports scientist?
Yes, I was a university professor, head of the department, of sport department, and head coach of my university team. And my background was track and field. I was the elite high jumper myself.
So you're not just talking science. You can back it up with plenty of personal experience.
Well enough.
Well enough.
Yes. So it was a long period of struggling for knowledge, you know, and I was lucky that it's right in the beginning of my university career, I found that I know nothing. This is, I'm repeating just the same way.
That happens to a lot of people.
Yeah, it's important stuff.
One of the first who find out this, it was... Socrates.
Yeah,
he's
Socrates.
Famous. I know that I know nothing. You know, after that, you have to be humble.
There you go.
So I start teaching in university after finishing the same faculty. I was finishing this with honor, and that's why I was invited there. But 1 year in army, Soviet Union army. I was in sport division, so I didn't have any rifle. Or
not the real army.
Yes, I had uniform of soldier, you know.
They didn't give you a gun, though.
Three times, bam, bam, bam.
They were like, after those three times, they were like, don't give him a gun.
Yeah,
well,
that's it. Give them a sport uniform and go and jump.
Did you have any role? So, oh, sorry, Doug. Go ahead.
I was going to say, so were you were the one that originally developed the pose method, or just you put the name on it, or
no,
like how did all that play out in the beginning before anyone else had heard of that term?
A term didn't exist before me, and I gave a pose completely illogical way, you know, because pose not related with movement in the human mind. Usually, it's a pose. It's a fixed position, right. You know, so. When I started looking for answer for what movement is and how movement build up, I started using footages for analysis of ballet dancers and the real dancers and karate, martial arts. And I had friends over there, and so I have a big accessible way to see all of the things. And my point was to find out how they teach so skillfully. So I was going around with this question. It's about 2 years took, but 2 years for this kind of struggle, it's a very short time.
Yeah.
I was lucky. So in one day, it was October 1977, I was crossing square, main square of our city, coming back from a lesson. And suddenly it crossed my mind. It's like, boom, like this. Bulb up.
Light bulb goes off and the idea strikes. Yeah,
yes,
yeah.
And it's like, in reality, everything happens through the poses, actually. They teach through the poses and movement happening through the poses. It's only a matter of which poses are main and which one is not. Mm-hmm. When this was clear, I came home, I told my wife, I found the concept, I found the method. She told, and how you call it? I call Pozny in Russian, you know. She told, such a word doesn't exist. She's linguist, you know. She's a PhD in English philology. Oh, I told, I don't care, I name it.
But basically what this was is you kind of came across maybe a language, like a central mechanism for how motion must occur,
yes,
regardless if it was a ballerina or a karate practitioner or an endurance athlete.
Any.
There was there's a language of motion you were getting.
It's correct. Animals are talking by pose language. When animal standing in the aggressive pose, you recognize that this this animal is not friendly.
Right.
You immediately.
Yeah.
And animals talk between each other, not in language what we're speaking or talking. They're talking in language of poses.
Absolutely.
And each pose is immediately recognizable, you know? Immediately. Otherwise, it will cost for your life.
Yeah.
So, and pose has every single component of what movement has, you know? Psychological, intention, mental, goal-oriented, everything. It's united in one, integrated in one single movement, which called pose.
Wow.
So when boxer is standing in pose, you know, it's a boxer with a
hockey.
You recognize
him? Good call, Mike.
Yes, right.
Yeah, well done.
It was like video games.
So it's everything become very clear. You know, I, in the week, I was teaching all track and field events pose method. Wow. And pose concept, pose model, and pose method. Method is a teaching. Mm-hmm. Model is a biomechanical structure, how this movement is built up. And concept is a set of ideas, how this movement is created, how it could be operated, by which laws, principles, and so on.
So it sounds like a very elegant way of assessing motion where everything comes together and
yes,
easy explanation. That's
it's
how
correct.
You know it's probably a good explanation.
Yes, and it's very easy to identify and analyze. I will give you just a confirming kind of story. I'm in Hawaii, Honolulu, teaching running. But the wife of my friend, and both of them pose coaches, high level. And she is a teacher in Hawaiian...
the dancing?
Like no, canoeing.
Oh, canoeing. Paddleboard?
No, it's a... it's a boat on...
it's a tribal local boat.
Yes, right.
Two floating... things with sticks in between.
Right, it's
tribal.
Several people in the boat and they're doing with rowing, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And she came to me and told, we couldn't find out what best way to do this rowing in the group. Could you help us to do these things? I told, I don't mind. Let's go and see it. They took me on the main canal in Honolulu. It's right in the middle of the city. Mm-hmm. And the people asked me, did you do this ever yourself? I said, I never seen it even. And how you will do teach us? I said, let me see what you do. And after that, I will tell you how I will teach you. They didn't know what I'm into. Mm-hmm. So they will made several back and forth.
Do a demonstration.
Demonstration on a boat, and I saw what they're doing wrong. You know, it was a wrong body position.
Right.
And you see, in pose concept, the main thing is how you're using body weight. Pose represent the main thing, the best or favorable use of the body weight. Body weight represent gravity. So, in any event you're coming, you have to look at positions from point of view. Can you use body weight in this position or not? If you cannot use body position, it's a wrong pose.
Oh.
This is what how it works. Because if it's a wrong pose, muscles do not work right.
Yeah, this is your keystone of the whole
thing. Of course, because muscles are serving body weight, not anything else, not brain. Please don't confuse. Because before brain was developed, brain called neocortex is a new thing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Before brain was developed, body weight and the muscles relationship already existed several million years.
Yeah, that's right.
It's a very long marriage and very successful.
Well, I've heard that the only reason that a brain exists because you have to coordinate
of course.
Motion and complicated organ. You need, a sponge doesn't need it, but an animal needs a lot of hardware to operate a bone.
Right. You see, this is what they call it. It's called a nervous system. It's a comfortable thing, you know, but reality is that existed before brain, the nervous system existed, system of correlation between body parts over nervous system. Mm-hmm. It's much faster, it's actually, you know. And it's old way of, it's through tissues, just goes signal, you know. Mm-hmm. And while we get uncomfortable in developing coordination through nervous system, it's much slower actually, you know. That old system kind of went in a garage. Yes, and we're using only in extreme situations these things. When something emergency between life and death happening, we're using that, it's called continuum pathway. This is what called in neurological linguistic, you know. Mm-hmm. So this we're using only in only very few times in life, maybe, you know. And nervous system gives you comfort zone, you know, to regulate everything. This is what downside of nervous system. But good thing, you're comfortable. And pose created the uniform relationship between them, you know. Who is who, like in hierarchical relationship. When you're in pose, you have a body weight. So you can use muscles. And when you can use muscles, you can move better. Mm-hmm. So you survive. That's it. Final point of equation. You survive when you have muscles involved, but muscles work when your body is available. And when body weight available, it's the best pose.
Yes, if you peel away all the layers of what a human is, you get a foundation of what an animal needs to do to go get prey, to attract mates, to escape the threat of another, you know, predator. It's all basically, can I move my body mass? It's like it all boils down to right?
Weight, body weight.
Body weight.
Body mass.
I'm a dummy, doctor. I'm just yapping at my mouth.
You forgot about gravity.
Mass is it's a different definition in physics.
Sorry.
So at the most basic level, if you ask kind of the average person that's heard of pose running, but they're not really an expert in it, but they pose run because someone told them they should pose run because it's better for them than regular running, just kind of your average CrossFitter, not particularly advanced in any kind of way, they're going to say, oh, don't heel strike, fall forward. Maybe they don't even say fall forward. Maybe they just say lean forward. You made that distinction earlier. Falling and leaning isn't the same thing. But they're going to say basically the difference between pose running and regular running is you don't heel strike when you pose run, you land on the ball of your foot. And that's way oversimplified, I'm sure. So can you, in the most basic way, for someone that wants to just run faster with less injuries, explain pose running for someone that's basically never heard of it?
Mm-hmm. Okay. I will try to be as much succinct. I'm concentrating right now because what Doug is asking, it's really difficult. Yeah. Okay, I'll try it. I'll do it, you know. So we have to understand what is essence of running from mechanical point of view, you know, first. Not from physiological or anatomical, from physical point of view.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we will get in a trap again, you know. So first one, how the material body is moving from point A to point B. This is the first answer should be done. And physics, mechanics gives a very simple answer. Only by external force. Muscles, by definition, internal force. So it's immediately exclude muscles as our propulsive mechanism. Do you understand?
And the only external force acting on you
it's
is gravity?
It's correct. Okay. There are other external forces, like ground reaction force exist as well, friction, but they are not propulsive forces by definition. That's why they are...
Equal and opposite forces cancel each other out, is what you're saying?
Not. They are not propulsive forces.
They're not propulsive.
Oh, it's vertical. It's not linear.
A ground reaction is a reaction only, you know? It's not force which produces the movement.
You're not gonna move in any direction. Shit.
Fight through Mike.
I don't know. I can't simplify this. Go ahead.
Oh, this is what's happening. So we have to understand. So one only external force exists for us, which moves us... it's a gravitational force, but gravity works only downward, you know, vertical. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So how we can transfer next thing is how we transfer gravity in the horizontal direction. And this we're coming to the point that actually our movement is not linear movement or translating movement. It's actually rotational movement.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to look at the running as a rotational movement, because only rotation is produced by gravitational force, because gravity becomes gravitational torque. Our body is a rod, lever.
Mm-hmm.
When you're touching support, you're getting body weight, and this body weight start rotate you around point of support, pivotal. And this is what movement happen.
So you put your foot down, and then gravity is sort of coaxing you forward, and you rotate off your foot, and you go forward.
Support arresting your falling. Mm-hmm. And when you see, this is what happened. Look, this is what happened.
So those in the audience, Todoromov has a toothpick into his hand.
Yes.
He's going to let it fall, and it falls forward.
It goes this. But when it's touching support, it becomes body weight.
Yeah, in your hand, you let go of it, it falls forward.
Yes, right. And then when you're finishing falling, you have to now reconcile and get back into
put
falling.
Put your foot back down again.
You don't need to. It will happen.
Okay. So yeah, what happens is you lean fall forward.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mike. I do appreciate it.
You fall forward. You catch yourself.
Yes.
By letting your foot fall.
Yes.
And then you
fall again.
And then you pull that foot from the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of like your rotation that you're talking about.
It's correct. Yes. In bigger angle, you're rotating. Fast speed comes in.
So there's three main phases, mm-hmm. right? What are those?
Pose, fall, pull.
Pose, fall, pull. So pose is when you're in stance on a single leg.
It'd be like a figure
falling,
four, right?
Falling is when you're falling forward. Your body's at an angle.
Rotating, yes.
And then pull is when you pull your back leg off the ground.
Yes, when you're losing support, and it's happened when you're reaching one body weight, a ground reaction force. It's a very interesting, beautiful picture, which I'm describing right now. I'm preparing an article for the one of the series magazines, you know.
So when somebody is not in the proper pose, some things that are happening is the foot is landing in front. And that's when the heel strike, the dreaded heel strike occurs.
Yes, sir.
another problem that happens would be the foot stays on the ground too long.
Yes.
They don't pull.
Yes.
The foot off the ground, and then people also don't end up in that figure four position.
That's correct.
At the top. And you were saying earlier during a talk that talking about cadence,
mm-hmm.
and saying that cadence, the speed at which somebody moves horizontally has less to do with cadence and more to do with the angle that they're falling.
Mm-hmm. Cadence is another mechanism which allows to help this falling happen. You see, it exists always the mathematical relationship. This level of, for example, here, it's a cadence, right? So you on this cadence and you can increase angle, going. But when you increase angle, your speed goes up. And you're reaching level of speed, velocity, when that cadence already doesn't fit that angle.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to change cadence.
You have to increase the cadence with the angle.
Yes, it's correct. It's like steps like this. It goes. You see, so it exists this zone on this cadence. You can increase speed, right? Then you have to change cadence to increase the angle again.
So what's basically being described like is that the faster we travel, the cadence increases, but the lean or the fall, the angle of the fall increases as well. But the where people get it screwed up is not being in optimal position during the fall.
It's correct.
Okay.
One quick way, if I can chime in.
Jump on the mic, man. Spin around the other way, sorry.
It's on one side.
Yeah, talking to.
So one thing I can say that's an easy example of this. Really close. Okay. So one thing I can say is a practical example of this is if you can run in place with world record cadence, you start to see that it's not about the cadence. If you can run in place and have just Usain Bolt cadence, but you're not actually moving forward, that's all you need to know, that cadence doesn't directly contribute to moving forward. And that the falling angle is what ultimately decides that. That's where you have the displacement of the general center of mass. And the other point that I wanted to touch on Doug, from a practical standpoint, there is no such thing as describing quote unquote regular running and then pose running. Mm-hmm. Because what Dr. R did is he found that by analyzing thousands and thousands of runners, what he found was that he found the three elements that all runners do. So guess what, Doug? You have a pose position, you fall forward, and you pull your foot from the ground. Mm. That's not...
Hey, Doug.
We all do. We all do. So what I'm getting at is it's not Dr. Romanov's opinion of what should happen. Mm. It's a description of what does happen. Mm. And it's not your option, Doug, to choose to do those things or not. The reality is it's less of an option. It's more of an optimization. So all runners do it. And so whether you heel strike, you will still be in the pose position. Your timing will just be off and you will expose your joints to unnecessary load. Mm. So that's why it for me personally, it gets frustrating when people are like, well, I don't do pose. Well, pose describes running, period. The three elements that you can't avoid.
Mm-hmm. I think it was just a special way. Like you changed your running mechanics to do this thing because it's more... Me being a dumb meathead, I didn't know that. Thank you very much.
Pose is the different positions you are in, running or not. I mean, dancing, you're in different poses. Yeah.
So the audience can pull this up. You can do a Google image search and see the sequences of falling, and you can see this cadence. You just pull it up on your computer right now, and you can see the positions, right?
It's so, correct.
And as it was said earlier, I mean, pose, I mean, we're all in poses as we move and as we sit and everything. But as you were discussing earlier, that you're just looking for, you have the pose concept or the pose method, and these are the ways that you teach people how proper poses. And so I think people do get confused when they say, hey, I run pose or something like this, when maybe they should be just saying, hey, I know how to run well, but they're using the pose method to teach proper technique. So I think there's confusion because people start comparing pose to, say, chi running, or I don't even know what all the different running styles there are. I know there's like classic heel strike. I don't know if there's a marketing name for that. Bad running.
From the makers of bad running comes.
Comes regular running.
Regular running
is what I called it.
and that was one of the things we've had the discussion before. Is like, that's just the way you're supposed to run. You know, pose running is just the way. That's just the way. Like you said, it's. It's not an invention. It's not a innovative thing. It's innovative in the way it's being described. It's the concept, the method, the way it's taught is what's innovative, not the actual movement.
The drills to support the method.
So, it's called discovery in science. Yeah, actually. Newton didn't invent gravity. He discovered gravity.
Right.
So
this is what the difference.
Yeah.
Regarding heel striking, like how did people start heel striking, or is that something that people have always done, or is that actually because of modern footwear and padded heels and all that? We'll talk about heel striking.
Let's take a break real quick.
Oh, tease.
This is Andrea Ager, and you're listening to Barbell Shrug. For the video version, go to barbellshrug.com.
Barbell Shrug is brought to you by you. To learn more about how you can support the show, go to barbellshrug.com and sign up for the newsletter.
Okay. And we're back.
It's a long break.
Well,
what was the question again, Doug?
I just want Dr. Romanov to talk about heel striking and just kind of the history of that. And really, is it as bad as everyone says it is? And is it going to injure you? Why does it happen? Just talk about it.
Okay. This is it's a good question, you know. First of all, science, as a matter of fact, started really in 19th century, and probably the most profound scientist in this case was Etienne Julius Marey, French engineer and cinematographer. It's his book La Mouvement in
1895.
Yes, it's La Mouvement. It was a classical thing, but he just
so classic as you get.
I want that.
Yes.
Yeah. Can we get that book somewhere?
Yes, it was repeated in 1972 by New York publishing house.
Oh,
somewhere,
cool.
But it's out of print a long time ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But you get copy, it's probably very difficult, but maybe you get copies.
Should we steal your copy?
So
it goes missing, you know why.
He described, you know, this is the whole science. It's first, Ampere called it descriptive science, you know. French scientist from 17th century. He called it descriptive science. So he described how running happened, but didn't explain why it's happened, you know. Mm-hmm. And he didn't care about heel striking. And in the early stages in the last century, running described, if you run slow, you're running through the heel. If you're running faster, you're getting on the forefoot.
Is heel striking like a new occurrence due to new footwear?
But in footwear, it kind of, again, cycle will return back, you know. And people start think about running as a panacea for life, solving problems, you know.
Yeah.
Health, happiness, and so on. You know, this is what jogging came up, you know. And nobody knew how to run properly.
It was a huge explosion in the popularity of, it turned into a fad.
Jogging,
what was that, 70s?
No. It's 60s, you know. It started in New Zealand.
His name Kiwis.
It's Arthur Leader. Arthur Leader started in Auckland, New Zealand. Mm-hmm. And
Michael Waite's the Kiwi hate mail.
Everybody's like, hey,
Bill Bauman saw that something unusual happening there. He, in 1962, went over there, got acquainted with Arthur Leder, ran with them, almost was killed because what they ran over there, it was a club of big monkeys, people who run a lot, and they run about 100 miles. It was philosophy of Arthur Leder. He's told to be fit, you have to run 100 miles.
That's pretty fit.
Wow.
Bill Bauman come back with this virus from New Zealand in America, and it's boom.
Was he the guy from Nike?
Yeah. He's the founder of Nike. With Phil Knight together. They work together in Oregon. Mm-hmm. Eugene, Oregon. And what happened next is he wrote the book Jogging, you know, and because he didn't know how to approach with technique, he just wrote, it's not important how you run, it's important that you run at all. It's a declaration, you know. Yeah. And because he had the incredible authority, you know, he basically dropped America into trouble. And then he came with this wedge shoes.
We created the problem. Yeah. Now we're going to create the solution.
Yes.
Sounds like government.
Absolutely.
No, Michael, don't take this into a political direction.
And he pulled out this Nike, and he was an incredible entrepreneur, and running boom happened, and the shoe industries overnight become...
$100 billion later, you got Nike shoes floating everywhere.
It's correct, right?
What's funny about all that, we were talking about before the show how the heel is such an interesting thing, because in mammals and or animals, who's running really fast, there's no heel.
Animals do not have
cheetahs. Where's the heel on a cheetah or a horse?
I wrote this in the book, in my book.
You know, their knees are backwards too. What the hell?
Yeah, I gotta get some of those.
So
their backwards knee is their heel.
Heels are done.
What? Right.
That's their ankle. It's their ankle.
And their backwards knee never touches the ground.
That's right. Dr. Romanoff, we have a biology major here. No, but yeah, I mean, you say the heel is a human specific structure for standing upright, as glutes to help hold a body upright. And these are all things that all
right. It's upright
position.
They're
there for a reason, but like the heel, obviously, you needed a heel to run, cheetahs would have heels, and they look really weird if they had heels, but they would if you needed it to run.
Of course, the evolution would not miss this point, you know, in this case here. And fastest animals do not have heels. You have to admit this, or you are denying something very obvious, you know, and telling there is no spots on the sun, like past. You remember history with Galileo Galilei about these things, you know, when told there are...
Oh yeah, Galileo points out that maybe everything is not what we assume it.
These guys from Vatican told, no, I don't see it. They basically denied things. So heels striking, it was a kind of easy solution to not talk about technique, you know. It was because everyone could run through the heels, you know. and shoes were developed exactly to fit this unskillful runners, you know.
Mm-hmm. So it was a mass marketing thing.
It's correct, right? And people believe in it. They want to run, and they run, and they don't need to think how to run. They pay price for this, obviously. By end of 70s, Runners World magazine in 1977 produced first survey about injuries. Results were outstanding. Two from three runners were injured every year.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned that people didn't think it was a big deal because, well, the heel has plenty of cushioning, right? It's got this little fat pad on the heel. It shouldn't be a problem.
So why is the injury? Why are the injuries happening with the heel strike?
Because Mike, it's very simple. It's a physical reality. Again, you're creating break, you know. You're on the heel, you're breaking your movement. Mm-hmm. And faster you run, more break you're creating.
So you're putting your heel down in front of your body, of course, and that's causing a braking force?
Of course. It's
right, it's like a kickstand right out in front of you?
It's correct. It's not increasing absolute magnitude of interaction with the ground because it's related only with the speed. Mm-hmm. But when you heel striking, is this impact just distributing over your body, you know, and hits some places which are weaker, you know? So
it's not being absorbed by the foot and the knee. It's yes. Hitting the heel. The knee is more than likely not bent in that position and just driving the force right in your head.
Yes,
and back.
It's correct, yeah. Right.
And so, you're restarting the effort each time you put your foot, but you gotta
of course you have to compensate.
Reclaim your momentum each time.
You're losing, you understand? Break is break. It's like an unskillful driver. He's pushing simultaneously on the gas pedal and the brake pedal together.
Inefficient, the hardest way to run. The braking and the joint impact is going to cause,
It's correct. That's why injuries...
Osteo issues.
The rate of injuries in running is outstanding, bigger than any other dangerous sports. You understand, guys?
You're going to move faster, more efficient, less energy, and you're less likely to be injured if you're running in optimal pose.
It's correct.
You know, if you're using the pose method to learn to run, I mean, how do you get started doing... learning how the proper pose method.
You have to, it's like everything else you're learning, you know. First of all, you have to learn main principle of nature, you know. Nature to be commanded must be obeyed. It's not my words, it's Francis Bacon.
Francis Bacon was a pretty smart guy.
Yes.
Put it kindly.
And a very vicious guy. He was famous for this. He was in very big position in a king's court, and he used this power.
He liked the power.
Yes, like Newton as well.
Yeah, so I guess we have here, if you want to lift a heavy barbell over your head, there's a right way to snatch a barbell. You can try alternatives, you will not
be... optimal way.
People think this way, you see. This is what mistake. They think if I'm pulling up and snatch some white... pipe
barbell.
It's absolutely different when I'm pulling 200 pounds, you know. It's not, it's the same thing. It's confusion only. That's why the same thing happening in running. People think, oh, I run anyway in 2 meters per second, you know, like slow run, jogging. Mm-hmm. Yes.
So the degree of your performance doesn't matter. The beginner runner and then Usain Bolt and all the marathons, they all obey the principles. It's a matter of how good they are at the principles.
Yes, just the matter of how much you are obeying, you know. This is a point. Thinking that you can, because while you're running slow and you can deviate a lot and you're accumulating injury potential slowly, so over time, you have illusions that you're not injured, you know.
That happens with barbells too.
Oh, yeah.
But for sure. That I know, doctor. But I can tell you that. I got the data for that.
And then one day you suddenly wake up and like, oh, it's pain there.
That happened on my 30th birthday. I turned 30 and I was like, I've been doing everything wrong. Oh, everywhere.
I will give you a Russian joke about this, you know.
Oh, perfect.
We love Russian jokes.
Oh, great. It's one. It's innocent, you know. If you're over 40... and you wake up in the morning and nothing hurt, you are dead. It's about perception.
Yeah. So speaking of perception, I heard you speak a little bit. It's been maybe 2 or 3 years now since that video you did with Louis Simmons popped up on the internet. So with Greg Glassman in between.
4 years ago.
4 years. It's called, you guys can go on YouTube right now. It's 7-part little series of videos. Mm. called A Violent Agreement. So what's fascinating about that is here you
great
are.
Great name.
Yeah, here you are describing Poe's and all these things. And then on the other side of the room, next to Greg, is Louis Simmons. I referenced him in a talk I just did, and we got to talk a little bit about him after we left the room, how this is a very curious thing. Well, one, you're very different, but now Louis is accepting and sort of sharing. He's so open-minded, he's probably adopting some of your stuff into Power. That would not surprise me. I think he is doing this.
Yes.
But to see such, you know, opposed backgrounds meet so perfectly in the middle and agree almost everything. The big thing was mentality. It was the first point, right?
Yes.
And you talked about the 4-minute mile, then Louis talks about what it takes to be strong. And going back to that brain discussion, to be a great runner like anything else, you have to break through the barriers that are holding you back, your own.
But Louis Simmons is a scientist, you know. He's a real scientist and the open mind scientist. Real. You see, when I'm telling real scientist, it means that he has an open mind, you know. He has no barriers of this thing. So he's very quiet about somebody's different opinion. You know, he is accepting this if he logically. I accept this. And he told, your logic is good, he told me. Yeah. And I have nothing to against this, you know, so we become friends.
So speaking of scientists, have like serious researchers taken the Poe's method versus other types of running methods and compared them over time? You know, one group of people with 100 people versus another group of people with 100 people, and they train for 8 weeks or a year, and they compare injury rates at the end of the year, or they compare one style of running to another style of running or to the Poe's method of running, and they run a certain distance and they measure caloric expenditure or average heart rate at the same speed. Has there been studies done on the Poe's method versus other styles of running with trained, experienced athletes?
Yes, it's done. In 2004, was published in American College of Sports Medicine article. Mm-hmm. It was a collaboration with Cape Town University with Tim Noakes' team. Mm-hmm. And I was a participant of this. Obviously, it was Poe's method there, that's why. We found it was three groups, for foot runners, hill toe runners, and posed runners. Mm-hmm. And posed runners I prepared myself. Mm-hmm. And all of them were barefoot to exclude any foot.
Oh, yeah.
Shoes right. The interference. So
no rocket shoes.
It's correct, no. Yes. And the results were outstanding, you know. First of all, impact, knee loading rate on in Poe's method group was 50% less.
Which is a huge number.
Oh, yes.
You don't usually find those kinds of differences in scientific studies.
It's correct.
Profoundly different.
Yes, and Tim Noakes, one of the most open scientists in the world, and he's a physiologist, and he always told me, Nicholas, you will explain me how to run, I will explain how it works in physiology, something like that. I tried to teach him at that time running Poe's. He told, no, I'm old dog and you will not teach old dog tricks, you know. And the time I visited in May, it was a World Triathlon Series. I was with Russian team in Cape Town, and I visited him there, and he told, Nicholas, I'm running now Poe's method.
So he resisted and he accepted once he realized.
Because he became ill, you know, he got sick, you know, and he had no choice really to continue. In order to continue, he told, "I'm running now on a far foot, like you advised me."
Nice. So mentioned the point in the study, and he can.
You want to talk into?
No, it's fine. About where the magnitude from the knee is redistributed.
Thank you for. Yeah. Okay.
Thank you.
I was going to bring that up. Thank you.
It was in this same study. It was shown that while on the knee was reduced, an increase on the foot. You know, mm-hmm. on ankle. You know,
ankle.
Yeah. But it's a logical distribution. You know, actually, ankle and Achilles tendon exactly the mechanism which is responsible for taking this load.
Mm-hmm. It's there for a reason.
That's the whole point of an Achilles tendon.
Of course.
It's better to distribute the load over multiple large joints rather than just one focal joint. And then if you're distributing across the calf and the Achilles tendon as well, those are, the calf especially is very vascular. It's going to get sore and it's going to recover very quickly, as opposed to, you know, only your passive soft tissue structures like your cartilage and your ligaments and your tendons to some extent. If they take all the force and all the load, they're going to get damaged, and eventually break because they can't recover, excuse me, as quickly as something like your calf muscles.
Absolutely. This is what reason is. Our experience is that our runners, whom we teach and control, that they run really pose, they don't have knee problems. Mm-hmm. And the calf problems happen, but very seldom, you know. Mm-hmm. It's happening.
I really love about the, about comparing, we're just kind of bouncing back and forth between how animals are, I won't say designed, but how animals are equipped to do certain things, like certain, like gorillas and chimpanzees and other primates, correct me if I'm wrong, don't have Achilles tendons, is that correct? No Achilles structures, because they don't run around.
Yes.
They charge a little bit, they have some shuffling, but they are made for some posturing and some climbing.
It's correct.
But we share the characteristics with horses.
And kangaroos.
Kangaroos and these fast cats, and that we have the ability to run. Mm-hmm. I guess you have... That shows me right there. You need to put as much force in your Achilles tendon in a healthy way as you can. That's what's going to keep you springing forward.
The kangaroos is the best example, you know. I would love to bring this topic. Kangaroo was researched by a group of McNeil Alexander. It's a professor from Leeds University of UK. One of the best guys in this field. They found a very interesting thing that... Achilles tendons were loaded over there, but with a faster speed, actually loading didn't increase. What increased, they're leaning forward, they call it like that.
Oh.
And they never...
They messed it up, they should have been calling it falling.
Yes.
They're smart, but not so smart.
I was reading this article, I'm like... The answer is right there, guys.
All right, so if I want to get started pose running, which I have done that before. I did a CrossFit endurance seminar for a weekend, and my calves were pretty sore, which means I wasn't doing it right in the first place.
That's correct.
But if I want to get started, if somebody want to go, okay, what do I do? All right, you've convinced me. I want to run pose optimally. What's their first step?
In a practical way, I would, if you live in Miami, for example, I would ask you run on the sand, you know. You see, on the sand, you can't be on the hills.
Like the loose, soft sand, or like the sand that's right close to the water that's firm?
Loose sand.
Oh, so you can't, you're saying that if you heel strike in the sand, you're not going to have any locomotion?
No.
Interesting. That is fascinating.
I've never even thought about that before.
And you cannot overstride over there, you understand? You cannot do push-off.
I used to run in the sand a lot, and now that I think about it, yeah, it was... I felt like I always had to shorten my stride.
Yeah, of course.
This is all.
You just blew Mike's mind. Holy shit, doctor.
Instant fix.
I ran on the beach for months and months and months, like every day for a while.
Yes. And,
oh, man.
And
that's interesting.
So you can't push off. You have to lean and use gravity while falling. Mm-hmm. And if you try to push off, it's too loose. It'll dissipate your force and it'll screw you up.
It's correct.
I have a good one because Nate Helming was on a show. He's been here speaking. He said, generally, I guess he would agree with you, and he's not going to argue, but I guess he said on our show, like one question he had was like, what do you do when there's some variance? Like for instance, you run pose, but what if you need to go up a hill?
It doesn't change. Gravity doesn't care when you run downhill, uphill, or you know, on an interfering course like trail, you know, gravity still works the same way, you know.
Wait, and
yes.
I'm kidding.
So if you're running up a small hill, your center of mass is still well above ground level.
Of course.
Right? And so you can still lean forward and have your center of mass.
Even with a very high level of inclination, you're still falling.
It's not like a push off, but maybe you have to raise yourself up more, and then you fall. You have to extend the legs and raise up, and then you fall. Instead of just leaning forward.
You're still falling the same way, but there will be work done to vertical development. Yeah. Of your body.
Is that the Princeton? What?
No, it's not a fire alarm.
It's a very polite fire alarm.
Oh, then it'll show.
It's not mine.
I heard you don't use phones.
No.
That's right.
Is there something in the Russian culture that frowns against phone use? Did you say in a very classic way, oh, he's classic Russian, no phones?
Was it Brian McKenzie? I was trying to get a hold of...
Oh, Brian said it.
No, I was on Thursday, I was like, I knew that Dr. Romanoff was going to be here. I was like, I don't want to miss him. So, Brian, I know you know him. So, can you, like, shoot him a text or give him a phone call? He goes, ha.
he's like, bro, he's old school Russian, bro. Whoa.
That's definitely what Brian
said. When I hear
old
school Russian, I picture you, like, doing math on a board, drinking vodka, like, nailing out these problems.
But you live in Miami now, so
yes,
you
I
drink
do.
Vodka or
no,
tequila?
No, not neither one. You know? I'm
disappointed.
Different creature in this case. I do love red wine, nice red wine. My favorite is Pinot Noir.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, me
excellent.
Too.
Yes.
All right, if you're ever up in Northern California in the next month, I'll be there. Fantastic vineyards. We can go.
All right. Then yeah. We got agreement. So,
is there still a community that is like super opposed to the pose running method? And you get hate mail from them all the time saying you're fucking totally full of shit? Does that happen?
It was at the beginning.
He doesn't have an email.
Yeah.
That's right. Is that why you got rid of your phone?
Look, I told you I'm old school Russian. No communication.
And I mean, there's got to be people that are stuck in their old ways that don't want to accept any new ways of doing things, right?
Of course, it's happening. Some people even deliberately would come to my clinics to oppose and dispute what I'm saying. You know,
obviously how dare they oppose pose?
Obviously, they failed because there is no really any kind of scientific evidence they could bring up. You know, I studied this field thoroughly so many years. You know, and what people are bringing. Own disappointments, you know, that this is
what's got one t-shirt. What you're bringing is only disappointment. Step away from the microphone.
I really never met any serious contra arguments, you know, and I met deliberately some people, very highly educated people, like astrophysics guys, you know, from Netherlands. I made a special appointment with this guy in Eschen.
His bones are in again.
Throw that thing out the window.
And that guy, incredible mathematician, you know. I came to him and I would like to test my idea and my concept about running. He told, speak up. I told, let me show you like some graphs. He told, don't worry about this. I do understand this. It's just say me the concept. And I'm telling, it's very simple. You know, it comes from things like Galileo Galilei's things, and I consider that we are moving forward by gravitational force, which translated through rotational torque and body weight moment, you know. And he told, and what's the problem here? I told, not just, I think this is not how we're moving in running and at all, in any movement, he told. I do not see any problem.
He's like, and? What's the actual question?
Yes, and next single, he told, it's fine. And I have two questions. I told, please do. He's asking me, did anyone came with this concept before you? I told, not really. He told, well, good. Next, my question is, did you publish in Scientific American or Nature? I told, not. He told, I advise you. So this is what story. You see, this guy, nothing to do with running, you know, he doesn't care about his ego not hurting because of my concept, you know.
Right.
So he's free. And I met people of that level, several, you know, and none of them was against this.
They so people who are going to resist might have a bias towards protecting the way they do things.
It's correct.
They just don't want, they're not... not open to saying maybe they were wrong and maybe they could learn and change. This is a fundamental issue. It's not the science. It's not
The real scientists are absolutely quiet about these things, you know, and they understand behind this logic, you know, and not just pulled our ceiling, you know, or sucked from the finger. It was coming from a long story of human beings, you know.
It reminds me of when you hear arguments of people will say quite passionately, well, certain other ideas in science are bullshit too, like, you know, for instance, species don't descend through certain mechanisms and adapt to an environment, to which there's no limit to the evidence to the contrary. No one's going to argue certain things in in nature, because we have just loads of evidence, and in this case, a lot of mathematics that can't really be fudged.
Yeah, so
this is the language.
I have already a set of equations explaining how it's happening, you know, how rotational movement is converting into a linear movement. We have already these things, and we invited real mathematicians who developed these equations for us, you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, so you have a book. We're going to have to wrap this up here in a second. You have a book coming out. When is it coming out? What's it called? Where do we get it?
It's a book called Running Revolution. It's coming September 30th. It's a publishing house. Yes, it's
Running Revolution, September 30th.
Penguin House. It's in Amazon. The pre-sale is going on.
We'll make sure.
Do you guys have any printed copies already?
Yes, it's right there.
Man, go grab one. Go grab one and pull it out.
Yeah, let's show it on the camera.
It's a publishing house. Send us some author's copy, you know.
Is there, do you guys run a website or anything like that where people should visit?
Yes, Post Method. Post Tech.
I'll link to all this stuff in the notes too.
It's postmethod.com.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That's also the name of your other book?
Yes, it's correct.
That's right.
If you guys enjoyed those videos, those are online.
Learn how to run on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
YouTube.com/learnhowtorun. Mm-hmm. And we're going to put the links in the show. Make sure to go to barbellshrug.com. Click on, you can go to like wherever we're posting this, which will be on the blog, the podcast link, and you'll be able to get all the show notes and all that kind of stuff. We do that now. So there's value to going to the website. You should also go sign up for the newsletter so you can find out when we do things like come to Princeton and, kidnap Dr. Rott.
Maybe you won't miss out next time.
Thanks for coming on the show, guys.
Oh, my pleasure.
We'll have to do a part two. We're only scratching at the issues.
Yes, it's correct. I would say I would miss this communication between you and me. It's very lovely and very friendly. And
thank you very much.
Inspiring communication. Thank you, guys. I appreciate it from the bottom of my heart.
Oh, cheers.
If you would like to move into other fields related with movement, I would be yours.
Nice.
You flatter you.
You're making us feel good.
Definitely going to have you back. Thank you.
Thanks again.
Cheers.